Northwest Arkansas faith leaders band together to respond to immigration crackdowns. A new pipeline of money opens up for the University of Arkansas Athletics Program, and an award-winning lyricist, composer, and producer takes his story to the natural state. Those stories and more are coming up this week on the News Wrap from the Arkansas Newsroom. I'm Daniel Breen, News Director of Little Rock Public Radio. Each week, we're recapping the top stories from all across the natural state. We'll unpack the headlines, share exclusive insights, and provide the context you need to fully grasp the issues that matter most to Arkansans. That's this week on the Arkansas News Wrap, coming up right after the news from NPR. This is the Arkansas News Wrap. I'm Daniel Breen with Little Rock Public Radio. A group of faith leaders in Fayetteville is holding prayer meetings in response to a crackdown by immigration and customs enforcement agents across the U.S. The Reverend Sarah Milford of St. Paul's Episcopal Church, Suzanne Bridges with Genesis Church, and Lowell Taylor, a local activist and organizer, spoke with KUAF's Daniel Carruth about the role of prayer, faith, and religion during times of political turmoil. Taylor says the so-called prayer guard is part of a larger national movement.
In January, I got to go to D.C. where I attended a prayer guard meeting. That's what they called it, prayer guard. And it was a way for people to pray for justice and peace and against state and community violence, including ICE. So when I came home, I asked my pastor friends to host three prayer guard meetings in February. And some said yes. Pastors Jonathan of St. James, Suzanne of Genesis Church, and Sarah of St. Paul's agreed.
And so you guys are here with us this morning. Why did you agree to do this? How did Lowell convince you?
Lowell is a great friend of mine. And so anything good starts with relationships, right? But my why is as a apprentice of Jesus, I am to love God with all my heart, soul, and strength, and to love my neighbors as myself. And Jesus also tells me to love others the way he has loved me. And so to see on the news the deaths, the murders that have taken place, and all the violence that has happened that we continuously see, my heart is just full and definitely want to start with in prayer.
Yeah, I would also add that the tension in the society around the nation is Northwest Arkansas is not exempt from that. And in any social justice movement, the faith communities have been that moral core and the backbone for keeping us on track and keeping goodness and God as our North Star in that work. And so when Lowell invited us to, you know, root any action that we take from here in prayer and to just kind of shower our community in this prayerful protection and keep us on the right track with moral integrity, I'm all in. And St. Paul's is all in on that.
Yeah. Well, I'm also wondering, you know, as people who are, you know, you have congregations, you're entrenched in faith communities. What are you hearing from people in your congregations right now? I imagine it's probably a tough time. There's a lot of emotions. What do you hear from people, and how do you bring up this topic to people in your community, in the congregation, to talk about this subject?
Yeah, I hear a lot of fear, just a lot of hurt. But mostly fear. Is my family going to be next? Is my coworker or their family going to be next? Who's going to be next? A lot of fear is what I hear mostly in our community.
And aside from the fear from those who wonder about who will be next, there's a lot of people wondering, like, where's the hope? How do I have hope in these dark times? And so, you know, we just came out of the Christmas season, you know, when we emphasize that the light is not overcome by the darkness. As Lowell mentioned when we gathered to meet, that being fundamental to our hope that light will not be overcome, that injustice for someone is an injustice to everyone. And those kind of core principles are fundamental to our core values in our community. And I think that's what binds us together. Whatever religion we are, whatever denomination we are, we have shared common values, and that's what's going to unite us. And we can come together in prayer and unity and hold that for all of us.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the other thing to add to that is the question of what can I do? Right, as always, the first thing that also comes up, and again, as an apprentice of Jesus, it starts for us in prayer, and being led by the Holy Spirit with next steps of what to do next. Yeah. But it starts in prayer.
Yeah, and well, for you, I mean, convincing other faith leaders to come in and to do this and to join you in this. I mean, how is that process, especially when it's a topic, it's political? I know I can imagine a lot of people maybe in those spaces don't want to dip their toe into controversy or don't want to alienate members of their congregation. How is that process, and how do you breach some of those divides, I guess?
Yeah, that's a good question, Daniel. I'm thankful for my friends, Suzanne, Sarah, Jonathan Louder, others who did say yes. I think we have said yes because this isn't about left and right. It's not about red and blue. It's about right and wrong. You know, we're praying for justice and peace. Dr. King said that peace is not the absence of tension, but the presence of justice. And so that does come with some tension, to say that out loud. But that's what I believe, and why we want to gather to pray. I love what Suzanne said about starting with prayer. We don't want to stop with prayer. We want to continue to pray without stopping. But to do more than pray. And so we hope at these meetings to introduce people to opportunities to continue or start to work with friends like Irvin Camacho, people like Sarah Moore, IRE, Common Good, AGRC. There's lots of opportunities as we wait for the Lord in prayer to work with him for justice and peace in our community.
I feel like maybe at this time a lot of people maybe are turning to churches and to religion to help them understand what's going on right now, to help them come up with next steps or to find a hope. How do you help people do that? What ways do people turn to your church or to your congregation to help them cope when things seem out of their control?
I think that St. Paul's has been a big part in the Fayetteville community because a lot of people who maybe aren't churched or don't feel like they have a church, St. Paul's kind of becomes one of the community churches, not exclusively, but definitely some people say, you know, I don't go to church, but when I do, I go to St. Paul's. And I think it's because we have an inclusive message of everyone is welcome, that love is the way of Jesus Christ, and we practice that way of love. And so in times when people feel uncertain or afraid and are looking for hope, it ends up coming back to love. And I think, you know, in the Christian tradition, Jesus proclaimed that love most loudly and actively and brought together community. And so when people are afraid, we especially need one another, and to be united and together, we're all in. Let's do that. Together. And it doesn't mean that everybody's going to agree on everything in the community organizing that we're doing. We're bringing together diverse groups, and it is our common values that unite us.
Yeah, no, that's good, Sarah. You know, I would just say, too, that in moments like this, silence is complicity in moments like this. And so, again, as an apprentice of Jesus, speaking out and using my voice in a way that is encouraging to others, and you know, to Sarah's point, promotes hope and love, because I believe that Jesus is the answer, and you know, that cliche, but it's not a cliche; it's real. What would Jesus do? And so. For those who are apprentices of Jesus, asking yourself, what would Jesus do, and being led by the Holy Spirit in that and taking action? Because again, silence is complicity.
That was Lowell Taylor, Suzanne Bridges, and the Reverend Sarah Milford speaking with KUAF's Daniel Carruth. last month, the University of Arkansas Board of Trustees passed a resolution that the university would begin feeding money to the school's athletic department. Zach Arnes is the program director at ESPN Arkansas, and he spoke about it with KUAF's Matthew Moore.
In a lot of ways, this is a mafia-style payment plan. The university received $4.86 million from the athletic department in an annual payment for whatever, you know, that went towards. Well, the athletic department gets that back. Now you're the university, and this is, I think, the thing that caught my attention was this is the University of Arkansas, not the athletic department, not the foundation, nothing to do with athletics, but the University of Arkansas, the academic side, is now in the football business. And that, to me, is alarming. That should be sending off alarm bells through the academic community. In essence, every year, the University of Arkansas has to pay the athletic department $6 million. Had a bad year? We don't care. Pay us. Enrollment's down? We don't care. Pay us. This is the scene from Goodfellas. I love that movie to death, but that was the first thing I thought about, that no matter what happens, the University of Arkansas owes the athletic department $6 million. And if you read the entirety of the decree, that cost is only going to go up. So next year, it's going to be six plus, and then it's eventually going to hit seven, and it might hit eight, and it might hit nine. There's only three ways you can – the University of Arkansas, because Charles Robinson went and said, I don't have this. There's only three ways you can do this. You can increase fees, and that gets passed along to the student body, which isn't going to be very popular. You can cut jobs and programs, which is what most big businesses will do, or you can get a hybrid of the two. None of these are going to be popular in any way, shape, or form. The part that I think gets overlooked in all of this $15 million, because you've got the 4.86, you've got the 6, that's 11. There's got to be a joint venture between the university and the athletic department to gap bridge that $4 million gap. How do you do that? The University of Arkansas is in the football business, and to me, that's wrong. This is the University of Arkansas's athletic department failed in every way, shape, and form, every conceivable measurement on how to attack the NIL era. They have failed. What they've received is essentially a bailout. And as the University of Arkansas board voted 7-3 to do this, to me, that's terrifying that they can unilaterally just say the University of Arkansas owes the athletic department $15 million because we want to be good at sports.
How common is this sort of arrangement in colleges around the nation?
I think there is a struggle for universities and athletic departments to come to a point to do this. I know there are schools that have a pattern very similar to this, schools within the conference. Is this the way we should be handling this? That your athletic department wants to be good, but they're not good at raising money. Well, that's their problem, in my view. That's the University of Arkansas's athletic department's problem. It shouldn't be passed on to me or the students or anyone else. You've gotten enough breaks. Your athletes get tax-free NIL money. You don't get tax-free money.
I don't
get tax-free money. But because we want to be good at sports, well, now all of a sudden it gets passed on to them. Well, you got that break. Okay, fine. That's what you want to do. But now we're taxing the students. For a young man or woman that comes to the University of Arkansas, has no interest in athletics. Well, you're going to get taxed because we want to be good on Saturdays. To me, that's not what we're here to do.
You say $15 million isn't enough. What is enough?
40, 45, 50. It's only going up. In the NIL era, because nothing is reported, or if it's reported, it's generally exaggerated. We don't know what these teams are spending. Ohio State in 2025, in the 2024-25 season, spent 33. That was the number they reported. Okay, well, there were teams that reported 40 in 2025. Okay, well, what's 26? Is it going to be 50? Is it going to be 60? What is enough? Nobody knows. And that's the you can't keep throwing money at it. How many people do we know that throw money at a problem and it never gets fixed? You got to have the right people to spend the money the right way.
Two of the no votes were people, and these two stick out to me for very specific reasons. One of them was former football player Steve Cox. The other was Governor Sarah Huckabee Sanders' deputy chief of staff, Judd Deere. Those two names feel pretty significant as no votes.
Yeah, Steve Cox, Charleston, Arkansas. I think the athletes of today or the athletes of yesterday kind of see the dangers that were the path that we're heading down. And I think from an academic standpoint, you can't be leaning on the university because ultimately the students and their parents who pay the bills are going to be the ones to suffer for it. I think it's reasonable. Arkansas's out-of-state tuition for to certain states is reasonable. If you want to raise that and bring it to a competitive level, I don't have a problem with that. That's fine. But if I'm going to charge Matt Moore $300 and Matt's a biology major and has zero interest in athletics, I think that's unfair. And we, you know, we were doing the math the other day. $25,000 times $300 is $7.5 billion. There's your money. That's what you're looking for right there. So it's $300 per student for an activity fee. Why? Mm. So you can be better on Saturdays. And that's all – that's what we're talking about. You know, basketball got an angel investor in John Tyson. He comes in. He drops his money in there. Basketball's competitive. Now we're trying to do this with football, but now we're robbing Peter to pay Paul.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that sticks out to me is this idea that, like, if there's enough money, we will be the best team.
Not a chance. Not a chance. Money isn't the fix. You've got to have the people in charge, the right people in charge. Kurt Cignetti at Indiana is the right guy in charge to manage the money. Nick Saban has said this 100 times. You can spend $25 million. If you spend it poorly, where are you? You've just spent $20 million. And I wrestle with this all the time because for the people who are supposed to be teaching our children how to live and they are so bad at managing business. They are terrible at it. You can't I find it when I saw the spreadsheet, I find the $195 million that you generated for the fiscal year 24-25 and you're still crying poor. I'm sorry, I have a problem with that. You know, as somebody who doesn't make $195 million, it's hard for me to work through that. Those are rich people problems. You guys figure it out. Stop asking me for money.
The athletic department also announced last week that they were going to enter into a strategic partnership with a group to secure live event bookings. We've already seen one of those announced with the Post Malone and Jelly Roll show happening at Razorback Stadium. Is this going to be enough revenue, these sorts of events at Bud Walton, at Razorback Stadium, to help to bridge that gap?
Oh, boy, there's a million-dollar question or $15 million question, I guess. They've had so many harebrained schemes that they've come up with over the last couple of years. I'm in a wait-and-see mode. This sounds great. You want to bring, you know, artists into Razorback Stadium? Cool, they had the Garth Brooks concert a couple of years ago, sold the thing out. They're bringing in two soccer matches in the spring. Cool, I'm for this. I'm for them. This is the proper fundraiser instead of raising prices to do. You know, this is a good idea, I think, on paper. They've had a lot of good ideas on paper that have just completely blown up. It's an interesting idea to bring artists in. People will certainly show up. People in Northwest Arkansas show up for concerts. I've been to a few. I mean, it is packed genuinely night in, night out. Okay. I'm in wait and see.
That was Zach Ahrens, program director of ESPN Arkansas, speaking with KUAF's Matthew Moore. An award-winning lyricist, composer, and producer whose career spans TV, theater, and more took his book tour to Central Arkansas this week. Mark Shaman previewed the event at the Clinton Presidential Center with Little Rock Public Radio's Nathan Treese.
Thanks so much for joining us, Mark Shaman. You have an incredible career. You've worked as a composer, lyricist with many talents, Bette Midler, Billy Crystal. You got credits including the musical adaptation of Hairspray, Sister Act, too much to mention. You've got a new book, Nevermind the Happy.
Go ahead and mention it.
Oh, yeah, I'll mention it all day long. Trust me, all day. But you've got this new book, Nevermind the Happy, Showbiz Stories from a Sore Winner, just released. Tell me about it.
Well, I'm just months away from my 50th year in show business, despite my youthful appearance. And just a few years ago, I just thought I would finally commit all these stories I've been telling over the years to, you know, just to paper. And having now written it, I discovered it is kind of an inspirational book because I have had just an endless amount of dreams come true from the moment I moved to New York when I was 16 years old.
Tell me a little bit about your career. It's, as I understand it, a story of rocket starts and big gambits. Like you said, you started in New York at 16, started working with Bette Midler at just 17. Tell me how all that came about.
Well, it's a long story that's well documented there in the book, but I just idolized her, and it seems like I manifested working with her because I call the chapter Manifesting Midler, because the first people I met in New York when I was 16 lived across the hall from one of her backup singers. And then an endless story of being in the right place at the right time. My ultimate dream came true. And I'm at a rehearsal with Bette Midler because I became the musical director of her backup girls. And she put me in her pocketbook and said, stick around, I could use you. And that was 49 years ago. And yet here we are now. On this Friday, she's going to be interviewing me at the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences Museum on Friday. Bette Midler interviewing me. Like, I still can't even believe that that has happened now. And I just have an endless amount of these stories of Billy Crystal meeting at Saturday Night Live, him introducing me to Rob Reiner, beginning my film career that just fell in my lap. And then I did the South Park movie, the musical, along with Trey Parker, and that led to Hairspray on Broadway, my ultimate dream come true. And a whole lot of other things in between, and Sister Act movie, and First Wives Club, and just so much. It's crazy.
So I'm glad you mentioned Hairspray. Of course, that is a huge achievement. Tony Award, Grammy Award wins for that musical adaptation of the John Waters film. Are you a big John Waters fan? Were you at the time?
Oh, completely. My co-lyricist Scott and I were on first online to any John Waters film. So lo and behold, he made a kind of mainstream movie, because the woman who produced it on Broadway was very prim and proper. And if she had seen some of John Waters' earliest films, I don't know that she could have survived. But thank God that that all happened. That was such a dream come true.
What are your biggest successes? What are some of your bigger memories on that?
You know, what was great, going back to both my junior high school and my high school, who both separately put on Hairspray. And I got to go back to my hometown and see the show that I had written being performed in the very auditoriums where I played the piano and dreamed of writing a musical. I think the kid was probably playing the very same piano that I played when I was a teenager. So that is mind-blowing.
Your book title, Never Mind the Happy, you describe yourself as an eternal pessimist, which in my opinion is a completely fair and reasonable position. But as someone who has seen so much success out of your life, do you have advice for those who may be trying to find purpose against the pessimism or amongst the pessimism?
Yeah, I deal with that every single day. I mean, you know, the subtitle of my book, me calling myself a sore winner, that's from, you know, me complaining one day and a friend of mine like saying, Mark, look at your life. Look at what you've had a chance to do. You are a real sore winner. And I had to say, touche, all right. But every day, you know, it's show business is just life with a spotlight on it. It's just every day we have to brush ourselves off and get up. And I've managed to do that up to now. But, you know, with all the successes that I've been lucky enough to have, you know, there have been great disappointments in between, you know, personally and professionally. And what choice do we have? You know, we just have to keep getting up and doing it. I've suffered too much loss in my life, especially this past year, to consider, you know, wasting any time. You know, it's so precious. So I think that's what my book really shows you, is just don't waste your time. Just keep getting up and doing it. I feel like I'm giving a TED talk. I never knew I would grow up to be an inspirational speaker, but who would have thought? Yeah.
That was Mark Shaman speaking with Little Rock Public Radio's Nathan Treese. His new book, Never Mind the Happy, Showbiz Stories from a Sore Winner, is out now. And that's it for this week. The Arkansas News Wrap is brought to you by the Arkansas Newsroom, a collaboration between KUAF in Fayetteville, KASU in Jonesboro, and Little Rock Public Radio. You can find this week's episode on any of our station's websites. Until next time, I'm Daniel Breen, and this is the Arkansas News Wrap.